This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I'm a little surprised at how you look today. You've got that bright red lipstick on. You've got your eyebrows really stylized there. You look like you stepped right out of the 1940s.
Apparently, I'm a cross-dressing 1940s guy. Goodness, which didn't really go over there. Well, in the 40s, so I must be, you know, hanging out at some sort of speakeasy at this point, or some leftover speakeasy from the 20s, because, yeah, Chris, I don't know where to go with that one.
I thought maybe, you know, you had been watching the episode we're going to talk about today, Little Green Men, and you were there watching Nurse Garland, and, you know, you liked her look, and you were just trying to see if you could pull it off.
Wow. Chris, I don't know if you immediately think that that's the person I might try to emulate from this episode. Wow, I don't know how to feel about that.
I guess, you know, Denning, the base commander there, would probably be more appropriate for you, right? Because I've seen you with a cigar before.
Yes, yes. Let's go with that. I'm sure he enjoys a good Cuban, and even though probably at that point it was still a hush-hush, you didn't want to let anybody know you're smoking Cubans, but that's my guess. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Denning.
Okay, all right. Well, that probably works better. All right, so we haven't had a show in a couple of weeks. I've had a major change in my life, which is affecting my ability to podcast. And so I have some news about what's going on with me as well as the shows in the network that I'll share with everyone at the end of the show. So please stick around for that. I don't want to take up the time at the beginning with that. So let's go ahead and talk about Little Green Men, Matthew. And this is going to be a commentary, but everyone, if you're traveling, if you're on the train, if you're in your car, wherever you are, and you can't pull up the episode, go ahead and listen anyway, because we're going to be having our usual discussion like we always do. But if you watch it along with the episode, then that'll be great as well, because you can follow along with the action. So if you want to get your DVD or your Netflix or however you watch your Star Trek episodes ready, we'll give you a countdown here and we'll hit play in 3, 2, 1, play.
All right.
All right, everyone, gather around.
I love this scene, and I love that Rom is the person who kicks it off.
Yes, yeah. Any episode where Rom starts off the episode, you know it's going to be good.
As you know, my son Nog will be leaving.
Oh yeah,
he's the very, very proud father, though.
Yeah, and I totally forgot that this was the episode too, where it's, you know, the whole culmination of that Nog storyline. He's going to be going to, you know, Earth to be in Starfleet, first Ferengi in Starfleet, which, I kind of give it to Deep Space Nine. I think it's really cool that they went there with Nog. I mean, a character that probably just would have been a side character in anything else and never gone anywhere, but they really do something with this, character arc, and I don't know, it's just, it's one of those things that are so special about Deep Space Nine.
And this moment here with Worf and O'Brien also is nice, because Worf, I guess it's his prejudice against Ferengi, perhaps. He doesn't really like the idea of them going to the Academy, but as O'Brien points out, not so long ago, you were the only Klingon there. Maybe some people thought that might not be a good idea either.
Yeah, well, and that is a great point too as well, Chris. I mean, the TNG had really pioneered that, obviously, for the Klingons, and now they're doing it for the Ferengi as well, really changing how we think about these different races, especially the Ferengi after the start they got in the Next Generation. No more laser whips here.
Out of a replicator? Try out of my quarters. This is mine. I've been looking for this.
It would have
been
awesome.
Years.
Well, there is the Marauder Mo figure.
That's true.
It would have been awesome if they had some actual fur coats and whips on sale here. Oh, and the tooth sharpener. So one of my most memorable moments from Deep Space Nine that has nothing to do with any of the serious stuff that we always talk about.
Hey, and Jake Sisko in this episode.
He's wearing the bus seat as
yes,
well.
Yes, he is. That's fantastic. I love that he's like immediately like, how much?
It's like, this is the best thing I've ever found at a yard sale.
That is really funny too. This may be the first depiction of a yard sale in Star Trek.
Right, it is. The first yard sale ever in Star Trek. Took them all the way until season 4 of DS9.
That's right. I mean, can you imagine a Kirk yard sale?
Oh,
it might have to be an 18 plus.
Our ship, my ship, the shuttle Cousin Gala owed me.
You know, I feel like in this episode, Rom is a little bit more interested in profit than he normally is at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back, you know. Rom is such an interesting character because he kind of vacillates between being somebody who doesn't seem to care about profit to somebody who does, you know? And what I always figured is that in a lot of ways, Rom may be just playing he's so dumb. Because we realize later on, Rom is not that dumb, you know?
Sure.
And so I think a lot of times in these earlier seasons, I always get the feeling like he really is just kind of playing dumber than he actually is so that people don't suspect.
Yeah, it could be, because clearly he's not as goofy as he comes across.
Right, yeah. Right.
Galo must have paid a fortune for it.
You mean it'll actually fly?
I gotta say, though, Ferengi ships are not exciting. The design work to me is just, not something that... In fact, I expect it to look more kind of like a Sona ship, where they have, a big old couch, you know, and... Just things like that. That's what I would expect from a Ferengi ship.
Well, you know, they like to eat grubs. They like to eat bugs. And I feel like their ship designs seem inspired by bugs,
too. That's true.
Think about a beetle. Think about the beetles with pinchers.
Yeah, the outside definitely. I was thinking just more of the inside. It's just not really inspired. I'm surprised because, you know, Ferengi like things over the top and you know, kind of opulent, and I would have kind of expected the inside design to be more like a Sona ship, where it's just like a huge couch we lounge around, you know, we are enjoying our, you know, wealth. And if you're Ferengi and you own your own ship, I don't know.
Well, and you would also think that on a planet where you have to spend so much time inside because it's raining all the time, that they would have the greatest interior decorators in the galaxy.
That is true. I mean, not that we might think that, especially with their love of everything being gold plated and, you know, stuff like that. I just picture one of those really gaudy houses that you go into with the chandeliers.
You think the gold iPhone would be really popular on Ferengi.
Yeah, they only make them in gold. Forget silver, you know. But I mean, because you can't make it out of latinum because latinum doesn't... Apparently only comes in that kind of weird gelatinous state.
Right,
which, how does that become, Chris, a currency?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you have to encase it in gold, so...
I guess... What makes anything popular, I don't understand. Or what makes something worth something is what you put, you know, value into it. But who thought that this, like, gelatinous material... That's what we're going to, like, base all of our currency systems on?
Well, you know, in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy... The idiots that were shipped off of this planet that crash-landed on Earth and became our actual ancestors, they decided to use leaves as currency.
That's true.
And then they realized there were way too many leaves, so they burned down the forests to make leaves more valuable.
Oh, man, what a good book. Oh, goodness. What I love, too, is that this is smack dab in like a third of the way through season... Four. When the show is just really, I think, finding itself in a way that it's taken off. And I really, really like just season four in general of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, we're not deep into the serialized war arc.
No, not at all. Yeah.
But the show feels very mature. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and like even though it's seen earlier, Worf already feels more comfortable here and everything, and so...
Yeah. Well, okay, Matthew, good idea, bad idea, leaving Morn in charge of the bar?
I don't know. I think Odo's got a point that he just may drink everything, you know, so... I feel like Morn might just sit on his stool and keep ordering himself like a free drink, you know?
Right, yeah. And plus, if someone tries to steal something and they run out, is Morn going to yell at them? He's just going to kind of look at them and say nothing, right?
Well, I don't know. I mean, apparently he's the most talkative person on the station, and so if you get him talking, so maybe he might be the best bartender ever.
Okay.
You know?
He's just shy on camera.
Yeah.
I wonder how many hours you and I spent hanging around up here. 2,147.
This is a great scene also with Jake and Nog, because we've seen them now for 4 years together, or 3+ years together, and we've seen their friendship, and it really is a sad moment for, especially for Jake. Because Nog has the excitement of going to Starfleet Academy, but for Jake, you know, his best friend is moving away.
Yeah, that is really true. It's a really interesting thing to see, too, how Jake has grown, how tall he is at that point. And it is an interesting thing to see that, he even got a guidebook, Chris. Is that The Hitchhiker's Guide to Earth? Mostly harmless, so it's a really short read.
Customs, culture, history, geography, everything you ever wanted to know about Earth is right there in that pad.
It would have been awesome if they had put Mostly Harmless on that screen.
Yeah,
right,
that would have been
part
awesome.
Of the title.
I like that Nog is interested in attracting human females. That's quite, you know, advanced for a Ferengi, because usually they would kind of revile at the idea of a woman wearing clothing, so...
Well, it shows how open-minded Nog has become, so...
Yeah, that's very true.
I'll walk you over to the airlock.
It's too bad his guidebook didn't come bundled with a pair of peril-sensitive sunglasses
like the old
Infocom Hitchhiker's Text Adventure game did in the box.
That was a good spot.
It is kind of interesting, too, because, I think once Nog leaves for a while, that's where Jake's storylines start to kind of fade. You know, there's not as much to do with him because he doesn't have that person to hang out with where they would create a story with him. And So that is too bad for Sir Rock Lofton at that point.
No one warned Earth that they're coming.
I love Sisko's line here. What concerns me is no one warned Earth that they're coming.
It says here that humans didn't even have currency until 5,000 years ago. A little bank.
I love that they're complaining how primitive we were because 5,000 years ago we didn't have banking or any of those things. Like,
I love that they're on a spaceship going to Earth, but this is just like the person who's going to go to France or Germany or somewhere on vacation and they're reading the guidebook on the airplane on the way over.
You know what's great about this guidebook, though, is that it comes on a pad, And when you want to get the updated version, unfortunately, though, you have to buy a new pad. You can't just load it onto the same pad. Which
exactly, yeah.
So,
yeah, see, this would be like with the pads, it would be like the Kindle Unlimited would be something like the old Netflix model where they mail you a pad.
Yep, yep,
there
you go.
You want a new book, mm-hmm. and then you mail it back, and they mail you another pad.
You know, somebody creates an iPad in Star Trek, they're going to be worth a lot of latinum.
Right.
Maybe the Ferengi should think of an iPad. Like,
yeah, Quark's biggest business opportunity is staring him right in the face, and he never catches on.
Oh, that scene in, what was that, Nemesis or Insurrection, where Picard's desk is just littered with pads. Like, he's got like 40 pads. I'm like, what the heck? I could forget everything I saw. Oh, gosh.
How much?
20% of the profit.
See, here's where, Rom is just very interested in profit at this point.
As a Starfleet cadet, it's my duty to report any violation of Federation law to my superiors immediately.
Nog's getting tough here. I'm soon going to be a cadet, and I'll have to report you.
It's awesome.
I thought I told you to go faster.
Another thing that's interesting about this episode is we're more than 15 minutes in now. And we haven't reached Earth yet. When you think about this episode, you really think about everything that happens after they crash, but there's so much story beforehand that sets it up.
Yeah, yeah. They really are okay with spending their time to actually set up the story and try and make it make sense, especially since they are going to do this whole time travel thing. And so, I love
and
this.
Speaking of time travel, now this is awesome. This is DS9, always remembering what they've written in the past and calling back to it.
With the Bell riots. And doesn't this look just like Sisko? Ah, all those humans look the same.
I know, they all look the same.
I'll not tell Gen Zia that Quark said that.
You mean sabotage? He never did like you very much, Uncle.
Okay, the part here about how they actually crash, how they go back in time. This is one of those sort of like techno babble but don't ask us about it moments, right? Where Rom does something to the engines and they kind of flicker in space and then they wake up and they're in the 20th century.
Well, I mean, the problem is that they're carrying this chemosite, Chris, and I don't care.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's chemosite, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, exactly,
because,
exactly.
I mean, everyone knows you can't do this with the chemosite. It's very dangerous.
What I love about it, though, is that it, you know, they're about to go back to the 40s and all those crazy sci-fi, you know, comics and stuff from then as well. And all that techno babble, you don't really pay attention. It's not important. The important part is getting to the rest of the story. And Deep Space Nine usually does that, I think.
Yeah. And Quark is the audience here. When he says, "You're a genius," and Rom's, "Oh, really? You think so?"
Yeah.
I have no idea what you just said.
This was really interesting, too, because this is the first time, I believe, in Star Trek that we hear what it sounds like when somebody speaks Ferengi.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So,
and it was up to Robert Hewitt Wolf to come up with what that was going to sound like. And so he just played around. He said he put a lot of P sounds in, kind of make it sound alien. There's not a lot of it. Tell him one of the Martians is awake. I'm not sure how well. I think back to like when we heard Vulcan between Savick and Spock.
Mm-hmm.
Like how much thought goes into these moments versus something like Klingon, a language that we hear all the time, which is, you know, clearly designed to be an actual language.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. Because, you know, when you hear Vulcan, especially in Star Trek 2, it doesn't sound all that different. I mean, even some of the words they say sound pretty familiar. So or when C-3PO's talking to the door at Return of the Jedi, and it sounds pretty similar, and I'm like, you're not really speaking another language. You're just making crap up.
Well, C-3PO, he speaks so many languages that he can easily just make anything up he wants.
That's true, yeah. I love that we're still at the point in TV here where you can smoke on TV a lot and it's okay.
You know, well, it's kind of interesting because I think at the time that this was shot, we really weren't in that time anymore. We had already progressed because, you know, this was maybe a little bit after, or at least around the time when the government really came down on the tobacco industry. But I think that we were at a point where, like you said, it was still acceptable that if you were going to do a period piece and you wanted it to be authentic, you could still get away with it, like in this case. It's one thing I like about Mad Men these days is that they're actually doing it, even though it's maybe not quite as acceptable, but they want to make it authentic. And, you know, if no one were smoking here, it would seem quite odd.
Yeah, I just remember talking to Jose on the 602 Club when we were talking about Constantine, and he didn't really smoke in the first episode, which he's a chain smoker in the comic, and it's like,
right,
just let the guy smoke. It's not that big a deal. We can put all sorts of crap on TV that's just horrendous, but a guy smoking, that's the worst thing ever.
I love that. I think it was Ira who said that he wished that they had brought Cork back to the station after this little adventure in Roswell, and that Cork was chain smoking in the bar.
That would have been hilarious.
Like, he just couldn't stop smoking, and everyone's watching him on the station with this new problem that he has.
That would have been really funny, actually. I like that.
Well, you're in luck. The president agrees with you, and he wants us to try and talk to them.
Now, the actor here, Charles Napier, actually appeared in The Way to Eden.
Ask you here just because you're Nurse Garland's fiancé.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I need someone to talk to these Martians. You're elected.
I love this idea of them, you know, they're meeting these aliens for the first time, and this is the whole Roswell incident. I think it's a really smart idea is to say it's actually Quark and Rom and Nog that they meet.
Yeah.
And,
well, I loved that because I've always been fascinated with the story of Roswell, especially as a kid. You know, these days it's a little bit different because we have a lot more information about it, but at this time we didn't have all that information. And so the moment this episode aired, I loved this from the very beginning because I thought it was so clever to tie that in. I love it when they can tie our own history into the Star Trek timeline, and to tie it in and say that, no, it was actually Ferengi was really brilliant.
Yeah. I love that they've been having this whole argument about whether they're dead or not, and Quark starts rattling off all the things about their Ferengi religion. You know, where's the blessed exchequer and all those things, and they talk, what if we're in the vault of damnation?
I know, we get so much information about them in this episode.
We mean you no harm.
And this is one of the most
brilliant
scenes here.
When they start hitting their heads trying to get the universal translators to work.
Did you understand a word of that?
Our universal translators must
It raises a lot of questions about how the universal translator actually works, though, doesn't it?
Well, they make it seem like that for them it's implanted, you know, somewhere.
It's like a Babel fish.
Yeah, exactly. It
but
really is like a Babel fish.
But it's technology.
Yeah. And but that makes a lot more sense that it would be kind of something that would actually be implanted instead of it being like, you know, your comm badge, which would
the comm badge idea makes no sense to me because how would you be the only person to hear the translation?
Yeah, you wouldn't. Everybody would be hearing the translation all the time. It would be really obnoxious.
I think these guys are from Australia.
Yeah.
It's like, no, Nog, they would be way more laid back.
Yeah. They'd just be like, hey, you want a beer? Which, you know, I think Quark would understand at that point. He's a bartender. I love this, that Quark is just pulling their leg.
The nose is awesome.
Well, and how good is the makeup? The fact that he can grab his nose and pull it around,
you know,
and it looks completely legit.
See, there's the look you were going for there, Matthew, that I mentioned up front. But I had no idea
they were this They weren't just stupid. They were violent, petty, bigoted, and selfish.
I like that Quark all of a sudden gets maniacal, and he's like, he's going to rule planet Earth.
Yeah.
And millions of primitive humans.
Well, there's no doubt that Quark is way smarter than these 1947 humans at this Air Force base.
Well, at least the way they make them seem. You know, I would hope a professor wasn't this dumb. You know?
Yeah, right, right. In real life, maybe, but in this episode, the way they're portrayed. I mean, yeah. If you were in Quark's shoes, wouldn't you be feeling pretty confident?
Yeah.
Grandfatharic umax.
I like that he's trying to get her to give him some umax.
Oh, goodness.
Every medical test I can think of, but the only thing I can tell you for sure is...
Do you recognize the actor here, Megan Gallagher? She was in one of our less favorite Deep Space Nine episodes, Invasive Procedures.
Oh, yeah.
When they come on and they try to get the symbiote out of Jadzia.
Yes, I was like, I know this actress from somewhere. Why am I not remembering? Okay.
She looks much better here.
Yes, well, and that's not an episode that I tend to return to quite a lot. So, even though...
I thought you had the graphic novelization of Invasive Procedure.
No. Matthew. No. Unfortunately, that episode is one that's really exciting in its idea, but the actual follow-through is just not great.
Yeah.
The ionic interference?
That's true.
Or I suppose it could be beta radiation, but that's only produced by nuclear fission.
Don't be an idiot.
Of course they have to get into, you know, the nuclear question here.
It does here. In the 20th century, humans use crude nuclear reactors as weapons.
I love it. Like, they just... The bits and pieces that they know about Earth at this time are just the worst parts. You know, like, there's nothing about what's good, which just makes me wonder how we... It's a great question of how we kind of even look at history in general, and what we remember and what we don't, and how much is actually just lost.
He seems to want something from you.
You'd better tell him.
It's easy to see how this time period... 400 years down the road could be seen as just one of the most troubled times in human history. And so those negative aspects might be the ones that, especially that people off-world would know about. You know, maybe humans themselves would be nostalgic for the good things that happened then as well. But the outsiders studying the history, that's what they would know about.
I love that he takes her bobby pin and sticks it into his ear to try and fix his universal translator. It's hilarious. It's so awesome.
I wish I could get some help. I don't know why we can't bring
they
a few more
experts.
They seem
so frustrated by the situation. Which is...
Yeah.
Oh, he's going for
the twofer. That's right. I think he's about to pass one off to her. There you go. Yeah.
He is. Yeah.
Okay.
But a double smoke.
Yeah. Well, he's just really that anxious, you know, he needs to calm down a little.
Well, and it raises the question, if there were five people in the room, would he stick five cigarettes in his mouth, light them all, and then pass them around?
I'm hoping that he keeps that for his paramour here and not for just everybody, you know?
That's funny, isn't it? Here we are in the middle.
I can see him handing the general one like that.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking back to what you said, though, just about how we all kind of... how people might view this part of history 400 years from now. It's like, but that's kind of how we view, you know, 1,000 years ago on our planet. And
true,
you know, so it's...
I mean, we talk about the wars, we talk about the battles that were fought.
What's that disgusting smell?
I think it's called tobacco. It's a deadly drug. When used frequently, it destroys the...
It's kind of like Beatles snuff, right? Though, I mean, like...
Ira also said they felt like they maybe went a little bit too far here with the calling out tobacco as being bad. Like, maybe it... Just seeing people smoking would be enough for you to know that they're making a statement about the time period and how bad smoking and tobacco can be for your body. But they really called it out here.
Yeah, I feel like Ferengi, who are people who really enjoy their vices, wouldn't care at all. Like, they just wouldn't even think about it. Because I just feel like if anybody in the galaxy would be smokers, it would be the Ferengi.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. Because they'd just pay to have their lungs cleaned or something, you know? I mean,
I feel like the Orions would be.
That too, yeah. I could see the Orions. Yeah. So, can you imagine, you know, the Orions in Enterprise with big old stogies, you know? That would be awesome.
That would be awesome. I could see it, like, when Archer goes over to the ship.
Yeah, yeah.
And they dance for him.
Yep.
Yeah, I could see the Orion handing them all a cigar, yeah.
Or being, like, a hookah fan. I just imagine them kind of all sitting around with a sharing a hookah. So, yeah.
I like the dog being here. We passed the scene, but
my name is Quark.
It was very clever.
Chief Financial Officer of the Ferengi Alliance. And
ooh,
I love this.
Quark is just making up a title for himself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm on. Who's gonna check it?
I'm Galactic Supreme Accountant Quark.
Galactic Supreme Accountant.
Trust me, it's in there.
So this gadget of yours is what makes it possible for us to understand each other?
This is really interesting, too, because, you know, we're also dealing with that issue in reverse with humans now of the kind of like the temporal prime directive and messing with time and, you know, giving people technology that they're not ready for and all of that.
Yeah.
And what would have Earth turned out like if, you know, somebody had given us really advanced technology that, you know, we just have no clue about or really just aren't ready for us. Talk about a bad time to give people transporters. You know, when Nazis are roaming the Earth.
Yeah, yeah.
We have machines that can produce food and clothing out of things.
Transporters as a way to transport around the planet for civilians is something that I cannot imagine how that would ever work personally. But that's for another discussion.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
A little more expensive, but worth it.
41 return.
That depends. What do you use for currency around here? Latinum? Dilithium?
We use dollars.
Dollars? Never heard of it. Don't you have any gemstones or precious minerals?
You mean like gold?
Gold is
good. Gold is
good. How much gold are we talking about?
Oh, goodness.
Seeing how we're going to be advancing your culture,
it's funny,
about
it reminds me a bit of Kirk in The Voyage Home when he goes in to sell his glasses and he knows nothing about the currency and what it's worth.
$100. Is that a lot?
You might be some kind of Martian.
Ferengi.
Whatever. But the more we talk, the more you remind me of my brother-in-law.
Is he a businessman?
It's a car.
You know what's funny is this general is actually not an idiot, which I appreciate about this whole episode is that, you know, these humans really aren't stupid, you know, and he's kind of already seeing through Quark, which makes him a lot more like Odo than I think Quark is, you know, excited about.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point. I do like that he mentions that his brother-in-law, is that right?
He's a used car salesman.
Yeah. Because now you can always picture Quark as a car salesman.
Yeah.
Americans.
Whatever. But if you won't do business with me, and the Russians will, who am I to say no?
See, Quark has no idea just how bad the thing he's saying is for these people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's
because he's going off Nog's knowledge of maybe these guys are Australians, you know. Yeah. We just know the names of some of the countries. He has no idea in 1947 what it would mean to say that we'll go to the Soviet Union.
Bodies with tobacco and atom bombs. Sooner or later,
well, and then he
that kind of stuff will kill you.
Mentions atom bombs, which is a thing that, you know, especially the U.S. takes very seriously at that point. You know, it's
baseball, root beer, darts.
Baseball,
yeah,
atom
root beer,
bombs.
Darts, and it's atom bombs. Fascinating culture you humans have here. Of course, those all go together.
Yeah,
it's like one of these things is not like the other.
What are you talking about, Chris? I always have an atom bomb when I play darts. If you hit the middle with
maybe that's what Miles calls Bashir's throw when he can turn around and throw it backwards and hit the bullseye.
World walk around
it's
naked.
The atom bomb.
Uh-huh. It's the
it's
law.
The law.
Yeah, that women can't work
alone. Women walk around naked.
Well, I guess I'm never going to visit your world. And neither
okay,
are you.
Now think, when you saw this the first time, did you ever wonder why there's this German Shepherd hanging around now?
You know,
suddenly, because he wasn't there until he went outside. Now he's hanging around inside the room with them. There's a dog in the examination room.
I really like that he's so smart, Nog is. He's pretty much getting some pleasure at this point from that nurse, and that's just so sick. Like, he's in front of his parent. Like, that's just not cool.
I'm not tired.
Yeah.
Something about that female that I don't like. She's so cheerful.
What about the general?
It is interesting, too, because, like, the difference between Nog and Rom here and Quark is very distinct, you know? Mm-hmm. So. I love that this dog is all over him. It's awesome. And then it's so good.
And I love that Rom and Nog are laughing about it.
Hello, Quark.
Odo, what are you doing here?
Placing you under arrest for...
It's interesting, too, that Odo can do a perfect German Shepherd, but he cannot mimic a human face.
Yeah, what is that about changelings? I don't understand. I mean, do they do it on purpose, is to set themselves apart from other, you know, solids? Or, I mean, he says he can't really get the intricacies.
I don't know, because they can do it. I mean, you think about the different characters throughout the series that get replaced by changelings.
Right, right.
So they can do it. Some of them, like Odo, can't. I think the female changeling probably can, and she chooses not to. Maybe she, because of Odo's appearance, she chooses to take that appearance, maybe.
Maybe it's just to make Odo feel better, so he doesn't feel so bad that he's not cool enough to do a, you know, good human face.
Or maybe just to interact with the other races, the other humanoids.
Yeah.
But brother, you know, what about the bar?
Who cares about the bar?
What's so funny about...
See, you know that Quark feels confident when he's willing to give up the bar.
Yeah, but I mean, what's so funny is, why would he want to run this planet? Because, again, he would ruin the future. Like, all the things that he knows, you know, that... I mean, these humans, like, wouldn't be worth ruling, honestly, because we don't have any of the things that Quark is used to.
Well, Quark just wants profit, though. I mean, I don't think he doesn't care about ruling them in the way that, say, a Klingon would want to rule them. He just sees an opportunity for profit, and I actually think at this point, a third of the way through season four, it shows some of the progress in Quark's character. But it also shows how far he has to go to get to the Quark that we see at the end of the series, who really does care about his friends and does care about his crewmates and actually has become more human.
Yeah, it is really interesting, because watching Quark here, it's like, this is the Quark that people still kind of like don't really enjoy or don't really like, you know, because he's just kind of... He's so consumed with his own greed that you're just like, you really don't like him. So, And I do like that they, in this, even in this episode too, they're showing the difference again between him and his brother and Nog, who are much more just open-minded, I think you put it earlier, which is really cool. So.
What's the word, General?
A little piano playing.
I love that the general's that Democrat's not as dumb as he looks.
He's a piano playing Democrat, Matthew.
Leave that in our capable hands.
Don't worry, General.
I love that they call them Martians too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if they're from Mars, but we're just gonna call them Martians anyway. It's just easier.
Well, at this point in time, that was, you know, everyone was thinking Mars. That's what's on the top of your mind if you're thinking about aliens coming to Earth.
The greater the profit.
What about rule of acquisition 203? New customers are like razor-toothed greeworms.
Well, and the other thing that's...
Razor-toothed greeworms.
The other thing that's so funny about this as well is that Quark thinks he's so smart that all 5 billion people on the planet are going to just follow him for what? Yeah. You know, like... He has absolutely no understanding of humans at this point, or even now, honestly. We don't like to be ruled.
Well, he sees 24th century humans as primitive, and so he's definitely going to see 20th century humans as primitive.
Why don't you tell me everything you know about the Russians?
Everything you know about the Russians.
He's like, they're Russian?
They live on Earth.
They're in Russia.
Mm-hmm. They don't like you, I've heard. Screaming.
Would you please stop doing that?
That's the fifth injection of sodium pentothal I've given him. It's not working.
Your biochemistry is obviously nothing like ours.
Then stop sticking me with those needles.
Captain, I think it's how I feel when I go to the doctor. Stop sticking me with those needles.
Well, and it's so funny because, you know, the professor and the nurse there, they're really trying to treat these people as if they are guests. And what's so funny is that they don't realize that Quark is anything but the person you want as your guest. He literally wants to take over your planet. And so the response that he's getting from the military here is actually not stupid, because Quark is trying to take over their planet.
Yeah.
From the inside.
Don't you people have laws against this kind of thing?
Not when it comes to national security.
But of course, in the Star Trek universe, the professor and the nurse are... they're taking the position that you would want humans to take from a Star Trek perspective, right?
Right,
being more understanding and respectful towards others, and in this case, aliens.
Why don't you tell us why you're really here?
I love that Rom just completely gives it up. I just want my boogie.
Kayla's fault. I want to go home. I want my boogie.
Boogie? You want the truth?
You want the truth? I'll give you the truth. I wish somebody had just said, "You can't handle the truth."
I've been studying you puny earthlings for centuries, and you're ripe for conquest.
It's not true! Morgan.
But see, Nog knows how to handle these people.
They've seen through our cover, but knowing our plans won't do them any good. Even now, 300 Marauder-class attack cruisers...
Rom just keeps shouting for Moogie. It's awesome.
Morgan. I'm telling you, this is crazy. Nog, tell him the truth. We're helpless. We're harmless. We just want to sell you things.
Captain, I'm not sure I believe this invasion story.
We just want to sell you things. Yeah. We're just space salesmen.
You're like children. Always walking around with your heads in the clouds. Keep talking.
When the appointed hour arrives...
This whole thing just sounds like an alternate universe comic. You know, just the Klingon shock troopers and...
Again... remembering that this is in 1947, it's like Nog is telling them the plot of some, you know, B movie, science fiction movie.
Well, and it's funny because the whole Benny Russell storyline is from somewhere around this point as well. You know, so it all kind of flows together there. I never really put that together that the whole science fiction aspect of, you know, these humans with the Ferengi is kind of in the same time place that, you know, Benny Russell would be. That's really interesting.
Gonna invade Cleveland?
Yeah. No, not here. That's awesome. Yeah, because if you were gonna invade somewhere, I'm not sure Cleveland is the place to
not
start.
Not Cleveland,
you
know? Right, yeah.
I mean, no offense to C-Town, but...
This officer, though, right here, the story that Nog is telling him, it's the easiest thing for this person to associate with, though, because it is just mainstay science fiction of the time, and it plays on the military paranoia as well, always being paranoid of the Soviets somehow planning an invasion. So Nog, I guess he did a lot of reading on the way over to Earth.
Yeah.
Or at least has been telling him a lot.
He got on his Comixology app and was reading a lot of those old Earth comics.
You mean he got on his Comixology pad.
Yeah, that's true.
It would be
a
dedicated pad.
Yeah, exactly. And then, unfortunately, you need a pad for each individual comic, which is really frustrating.
Each issue as well. Yeah.
It's a lot like a finger to me.
I love
Odo's
hero
fighting technique. He's so tall, and it's like a lanky fighting technique.
Well, what's so funny is that in reality, I mean, if they had the money, he wouldn't be human in fighting. He would have just used some tentacles and whipped everybody up, and then...
No, he would have remained the German Shepherd, and he would have whipped them with his tail.
Yeah.
But I don't see how an atomic bomb is going to help.
He would stand up on his hind legs and punch them with his... with his front legs.
It's much too complicated for them to grasp.
5 a.m., that's 7 minutes from now.
Don't worry, we'll get there.
It's so interesting, too, like, Quark is so up and down, and like the moment that the tables turn, he's willing to like completely stop his whole charade of like, we're going to try and take over your planet and everything, and go to, we just want to leave. Can we get out of here?
Yeah, just let us go. The scene here outside the hangar as they're escaping reminds me a lot of Project Alf, the terrible movie that they made as a follow-up to the series, because the series ended on an unresolved cliffhanger. Later, they made a movie where they had Alf held up in a base like this for medical studies.
Oh, gosh.
Breaking through the hangar.
Yeah.
It's an interesting story here how they found the footage for the atomic explosion. That they went through like hundreds and hundreds of pieces of film of footage from the time.
Oh, wow.
But they had trouble finding a good one because most of the film was black and white, and the negatives were gone, so they, you know, it wouldn't be high enough quality. And of course, even the one they used, which was from the Nevada test range, the film was so old, it was completely scratched, so they had to restore it just for the explosion that we're going to see coming up.
Wow, and I mean, you know, they hadn't made the fourth Indiana Jones movie, so they didn't have that to just use, so yeah.
Because then they could have gotten into a refrigerator,
yeah,
and that could have taken them home, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, that refrigerator was lead-lined and closed. Indy would have been fine. But that's for the 602 Club. I do love that. You know, I never knew that that wasn't footage that they had just created. I had no idea that was real.
Actual footage from the time period.
That is really cool.
Nevada test range. Yeah.
That is really cool. And honestly, it looks really good. I mean, they did a great job of cleaning that up. So.
Yeah, because the camera was very shaky as well, of course, because, you know, filming an explosion that time, and they had to stabilize it as well.
Wow, that's crazy.
Divine treasury.
What year is this?
Good question.
What's that? I love that they're so excited now to be hearing from humans in the 24th century.
Answer them, answer them!
This is Earth Orbital Control to the unidentified Ferengi vessel. Do you need assistance?
Yes. They're so excited to get help.
Yes, we definitely need assistance.
We'll be waiting. Well, son, it looks like you're going to get the Starfleet Academy after
and
all.
Odo are looking at them like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I do wish someone had warned us they were coming.
It is interesting, though, you know, Quark says this every once in a while, but that, you know, humans in the end really aren't that much different than us. And it is really interesting that they actually see that play out, you know, and there's a part of us as humans that, you know, may never completely evolve to that Star Trek level all the time. I just don't know if it's possible. But it gives us a good place to move towards.
Cousin Gala.
You're going to have to wait longer than you think. Let's go.
What are you doing?
Taking you to a holding cell.
Throw him in jail anyway.
Chemosite smuggling is a serious offense.
But you have no evidence. We used all the rest of the chemosite to get back to the.
And don't even ask how the nuclear explosion threw them back to exactly the right point in the future.
You know what? It's a whole timey-wimey thing. I don't even know how to explain that.
It's no stranger than Spock calculating a slingshot around the sun, I would say.
No, I guess not. It is kind of funny, like, the things that you take for granted in Star Trek, and, you know, I've always, as you're, you know, trying to get somebody into Star Trek, it's always funny to see it through their eyes, and they'll ask you questions, and you just, like, you're stumped for a second. You're like, I don't know how to explain that. It just is, you know, because that's Star Trek. Yeah, exactly. That's Star Trek, you know. So it's always interesting to go back and have to try to explain to somebody who doesn't know exactly what you're talking about, or for that, who, you know, the logic of Star Trek doesn't make sense yet. And, you know, after so much sci-fi in my life, it is amazing how well I understood Interstellar. So, you you can actually learn things from all this stuff that we watch, Chris.
Well, I think the other thing here is, so this is a really interesting story. And when you look at Star Trek and you look at the cases where they have some weird method of time travel, that really makes no sense if you think about it for more than half a second. If the story that it facilitates is really well written and really interesting, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't really care how they got there or how they get back. It's not important. But if the story's not great, then you start focusing on the actual method of them getting there and you realize that really makes no sense. That's very inconsistent with things that I've seen before. So if you look at the best stories, you know, The City on the Edge of Forever, this story, you know, I think is one, Past Tense as well. It doesn't really matter how they got there. It's just that they're there.
Yeah, and I think that's really well put, and it speaks the whole idea that it is about the writing, you know, and it is about the storytelling. And if you're telling a compelling story with good, rounded characters, how they get into a situation isn't important as the fact that they're there and how it's going to shape them in the end. And I think that's probably one of the reasons that, on a whole, that we all really gravitated towards Star Trek, is that even in the 60s with TOS and kind of the campiness of it, for the most part, it was telling us a very fantastic story with human characters that we resonated with and that we understood, and that continued on to The Next Generation and to Deep Space Nine and to the others. And so I think that that just speaks to how well all of those writers for, you know, 700 hours of Star Trek and over were able to keep our attention, because they were speaking about the human element. And, you know, that's really what Star Trek has always been about, is about exploring humanity, not really space.
Yeah, definitely. And they do that in this episode that we watched today, where, you know, all the commentary about tobacco and atom bombs and all the vices and all the dangerous things that humans did in the mid-20th century. Of course, we still do today, but within this story in 1947, you know, I mean, that's the Star Trek commentary. That's one thing that makes this, of course, science fiction, but really Star Trek. So, well, any final thoughts here on Little Green Men?
I just think it's a fun episode. You know, I like when Star Trek goes back and, like you said, it talks about our own history and kind of inserts itself there. And I think that's always fun and smart, and it makes, I think, Star Trek even more a part of our culture when it does those kind of things, too. It makes it even more of a hallmark, and I really appreciate that. And so this is one of those episodes that you can literally just pop in anytime. If you just need a good laugh, you need to enjoy something, this is a great, funny episode of Deep Space Nine. And Deep Space Nine doesn't get a lot of notoriety for being funny, but there are plenty of funny episodes in there. In fact, Chris, maybe we should just do a, you know, top five funniest episodes of, you know, Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
To let people know just some of those episodes that we really enjoy, so that they can just pop in anytime when they're wanting
that
something.
Are funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I love this episode. As I said during the commentary, I loved it from the very first time it aired, just because I was always fascinated with Roswell and Hangar 18, and I'm still fascinated by it today, maybe for different reasons, because, you know, today I don't think that anything, well, I think something crashed there, but I think it was something that we built, and there was a lot of cover-up going on. And what's fascinating about it to me today is the phenomenon that it became, you know, and the legend that it became. But at this time, we still, you know, we didn't know. It was a lot easier to think that, yeah, maybe they do have a ship in Hangar 18. And it's just, I think, very clever writing by the writers here on Star Trek. So one of my favorite episodes. All right. Well, it was great going through that today, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And so I was biased against it. And even when I started buying the two-disc collector's edition DVDs, I avoided buying any of the even-numbered movies.
Odd-numbered movies.
Earl Grey.
Like they stated in the end of the movie, you know, they thought he'd outlive all of them. And I'm like, yeah, that's what should have happened. We should have seen Data, like, in the you know, 26th century, like Data 5.0, whatever we call him.
To the journey! You don't know if she's going to stab him or smooch him.
She's going to smooch him, of course. After dessert.
After dessert.
We all know what dessert means.
Warp 5.
Along with technology and along with trying to study the origins of a lot of different things that we've come to know in the original series and beyond, it's hard to try and deconstruct it without insulting what has come in all of the things that we know of being Vulcan mind meld.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And my thought was, in the next scene, Crusher should have the body of the dead Klingon sitting on the back of her toilet holding a candle. You know, which she would only get to do after Lieutenant Yara's gotten to hold the dead Klingon up to her ear to see if she can hear the ocean.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Everything you would imagine would be in an opening title sequence for this show is in there. I think the shot that really does it for me, the shot that really pulls everything together, is when he dunks the basketball.
Melodic Treks.
So we do know an awful lot of people get associated with Vic Fontaine. He name drops to the nth degree about all the famous people that he hung around with. One of whom is Frank Sinatra.
Axanar, the official podcast.
When there's a possibility for something to be misunderstood or not clearly explained, it can potentially open up a big hole for a show, because people can end up going down a path that was actually not what somebody wanted to be done.
The 602 Club.
What are those Bond movies that you go back to time and time again because they just do it better?
First of all, Matthew, nobody does it better.
That's true.
It makes me feel sad for the rest.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what else we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere that you get your podcasts. We're on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Spreaker, BlackBerry, Windows Phone. You can go to our website and stream from there. You can also download the MP3 file from our website. And you can get the RSS link and pop that into any application that you like that supports RSS links, of course. All right. Well, I mentioned up front, Matthew, that we have some news about what's going on in my life and with the shows and the network. And this is my first opportunity since everything happened, really, to tell people what's going on. So many listeners may know that I have, you know, worked from my studio. I've actually been working from my studio for about 12 years now, I guess it is, you know, doing various work, client work and stuff. And I've reached a point where I have to stop working in my studio, and I've taken a job as the managing editor of a magazine called Metropolis in Tokyo. And because of that, I am no longer in the studio. In fact, I'm no longer home during the week. I have a 4-hour round trip commute every day, Monday through Friday. So it's very difficult for me to podcast right now. So my podcasting is going to be reduced quite a bit and limited to the weekends for a while. And we're figuring out what we're going to be doing with the shows that I appear on. Now, of course, this will not affect the network as a whole, because there are many, many people involved in the network and many shows that I have nothing to do with in terms of being on air. But for those that I am on, there will be some changes. Matthew and I are planning to continue doing The Orb, as we're doing today. So Matthew, I'm glad we'll be talking about DS9 still.
Me too. This show's, I think, for me, and I know for you, it's too special, you know, and it needs to, I think, and I'm excited to see it continue, because I couldn't imagine at this point, you know, after, I guess, Chris, we've been doing this for 2 years. It's actually the 80th show.
It's actually, yeah, going,
you know,
on 2 years, yeah.
It's just been a complete joy to do this show.
Yeah. And, you know, DS9, I think what we have with The Orb is very special, and so we want to continue doing that. Literary Treks, for those wondering, because Matthew and I do that show together as well, that's always been Matthew's show in the first place, because Matthew is the book expert, and Matthew is being joined now by Dan Gunther of Trek Lit Reviews, and Dan is infinitely more knowledgeable about books than I am, So really, Matthew, I think this is great because you and Dan are really going to be able to dig even deeper into the books for everyone.
Yeah, I'm really excited that Dan is going to be doing the show with me. It is sad to not have you there, Chris. It's not...
I'll pop in from time to time.
Yeah, it'll be great to have you visit. So, but I'm really excited. Dan is fantastic, and he's very excited to be there. And we wanted to be able to have that place for Star Trek fans because, you know... The books are one of the best places right now and the only place to get the Prime Universe in general. The comics as well. These are all really fun places that, as a Star Trek fan, if you haven't visited, gosh, I encourage you to hit I or Chris or Dan up on, you know, Facebook and at the Babel Conference and just ask us where it might be fun to start. And gosh, if you like something in Star Trek, there's a book about it.
And plus, we've got our author interviews on the
Literary Treks. Yeah, exactly, so which is a blast.
Yeah, so Literary Treks is in very good hands. And Warp 5, Norm Lau came on as my co-host recently, and Warp 5 is going to be turned over to Norm. So that will continue going under Norm's leadership. And the Ready Room, I'm still figuring out how I'm going to handle that. It will continue. I may change the format up just a little bit, and the frequency might change a little bit. We'll see. I'm getting settled into my new job and into my new routine. I've only been going 2 weeks so far with the situation. And as things settle down, we'll know a little bit more. But so the network is in great hands. We have new people who have joined our crew. Richard Marquez is handling all the publishing now and doing a wonderful job there. Will Wynn is on as content coordinator now as well. And so there's just there's so much going on behind the scenes, but shows will continue. Star Trek Talk will continue. So everyone, thank you for listening. And I'm going to miss being on the air as often as I have in the past, but I will still be around as I settle into things there. All right. Well, if you would like to send us feedback on Little Green Men or DS9, if you have questions about DS9 for the next Orb of Mail show, whatever it is you want to share with us, there are many ways for you to get in contact with us. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also find us on Twitter, where our username is trekfm. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And also on Facebook, we have our listeners group, the Babel Conference. That's a closed group just for listeners. We have hundreds of members. We have great conversations there every single day. Matthew and I both hang out there. And you can join by typing Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. It'll come right up. Or click discussion on the menu bar on our website. And both of those will take you there. And click join. It is a closed group. But click join and Matthew or I will let you in. We're both moderators. And you can come on in and join the discussion. And we hope that we'll see you there. So, Matthew, when you're not working out that hairstyle and choosing just the right color lipstick, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me, of course, on Twitter at MattRushing02. As you already said, doing Literary Treks with Dan now. You can find us there talking about the books and comics of Star Trek. You can also find me on the 602 Club talking about all things geeky all the time. Things that don't necessarily have anything to do with Star Trek. And then, of course, you can also find me at my own personal blog, 42lifebetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to get some umox from a nurse, where can we find you?
You heard about that, did you?
Okay. Well, you know, things travel even over great distances, so...
Yeah. All right. Well, you can find me on Twitter. That's probably the best place these days. That and the Babel Conference. Twitter, my username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C, and Brian with a Y. And as I mentioned, I am in the Babel Conference and I'm on Facebook, facebook.com/cbrianjones. So you can find me there. And then you can find me on the shows on the network. In the past, you can find me on Warp 5 and Literary Treks. And of course, there's the Ready Room, which I'll be starting back up soon. And also Continuing Mission, there are episodes out there. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that show at the moment. It'll probably become kind of a periodic show for a while. But those are all the places that you can find me if you want to chat me up about Star Trek. Before we let you go, we'd also like to say thank you to our associate producers here on The Orb. Norm Lau, who I already mentioned, is taking over Warp 5. Also, Will Wynn, our new content coordinator. He is an associate producer of The Orb. And also our friends Ruth Ward and Lisa Stevens. So we really thank all of you guys for your support of the show and helping us get the orb out to everyone every week. And if you would also like to support the show and the network, you can do that on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you can set an amount that you would like to contribute to the network on a monthly basis. Every little bit helps. Every little dollar helps. Helps us keep things going. It's actually very, very important right now for us to have listener support to keep the shows going, because we have to cover the cost of hosting and distribution and the infrastructure of how we record and how we produce the shows. So if you can, please head over to patreon.com/trekfm and support the network. You'll be supporting all the hosts and all the shows, and we really thank you for anything that you can do there. And of course, Norm, Ruth, Lisa, and Will, we thank you so much for your support and being associate producers. Well, Matthew, it was great to do another show with you after the little break, so I'm looking forward to hopping back in soon and doing another one.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.